Welcome to Record Scratch. I am your host, Kara Kavensky. Humor is an essential component of healing. It's also a component of grief. Laughter and tears are always side by side. When I picked up the memoir by Jessica Waite called The Widow's Guide to Dead Bastards, I absolutely loved it. She had me at bastards. Jessica is my guest today, and in addition to her edge of humor, she addresses being open to possibilities, generational trauma, and anger. Immediately after Jessica's husband, Sean, died of a heart attack, she discovered his shocking secrets. Affairs, drug abuse, pornography addiction. She was overwhelmed by all of this, and yet found the courage to share her story in this amazing memoir. Thank you for joining me, Jessica.
Oh, Kara, it's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
The title, the cover is so explicitly fabulous. Every woman should have copies of your book strategically placed throughout the house if they have a significant other that needs a boost.
Yeah, that's I didn't anticipate that as a consequence, but a few people have told me that chores are getting done around their home because I think their husband is a little bit scared seeing the title of the book laying around. But it's actually a grief memoir and sort of a healing story that asks the question about whether relationships can heal across the veil of death, because I found out very shortly after my husband died that he'd been keeping secrets from me. And so it starts out with a very sort of angry, betrayed, grieving, single, widowed mom and goes from there.
You do a beautiful job of sharing your story. And yes, you right out of the gate, you open the book with a pretty explicit, back to that word, chapter of your discovery of things that you had no idea that your husband was into. And I would like for you to share just a little bit. I want to encourage everyone to get the book, and it is available at most libraries as well, because I think that there's a current of fandom that's developing around your memoir. So I'm very excited for you.
Yeah, thanks. As the book starts out, I've discovered that my late husband had been basically hoarding pornography since the advent of the internet. So he had built this absolutely enormous cache that I called the Matrix of Porn. So the story starts with me looking at that and trying to make sense of what was he into and why wasn't I enough for him? You know, those horrible, insidious questions where we start to turn that kind of thing on ourselves right away. And then flash forward, the meat of the story starts with finding out that he died suddenly of a heart attack when he was away on a business trip to Houston. And then the porn wasn't the only thing that I found out. There was infidelity, drug abuse, compulsive spending. And for all intents and purposes, for most of the world, Sean was a really great guy. He was beloved by many. I really loved him. Everything was not perfect in our relationship or in our marriage, but there was enough goodness that I could see that I was willing to stick with it for most of the time. And so I did feel pretty blindsided by how deceived I had been. That was one of the hardest things. I think it's so hard for anyone to admit when we've been deceived, because there's so much cultural support to blame. You know, how could you not know? How could you be blind? All the judgment that comes with that kind of thing. So it took me a while to kind of build up the courage to decide to tell this story for those reasons.
Initially, in starting this interview, I'm laughing about the title and how catchy it is. But you're right. This is a grief memoir. It's about very serious topics. You've been through so much, and we are a decade out from this experience. And you share so beautifully the steps and the method that you approached with your 9-year-old son. He was 9 when his dad passed, and the family that you thought you had, you did have in many ways, and you do look at it that way. And then you're rediscovering these horrible things about him in hindsight. What were some of the key things that helped you with your grief at the onset of becoming a widow very suddenly?
The first things that I turned to were therapy. So I had a couple of therapists, one that I went to for grief through a hospice program, and one that I went to, I called it for everything else, which really meant rage, because I didn't feel like I could tell many people about this because I was still very much under the umbrella of wanting to protect my husband's reputation, not bring the same pain that I was feeling, the pain of the loss of the identity of my husband to his family. So those things were really instrumental at the beginning. And then weirdly, something that I talk about in the book too, I felt like I was kind of receiving some grace from the universe or whatever. If things were happening that didn't used to happen around my home. But like one of the things was that books were jumping out to me at the library. And then when I would read them, I would feel like they had an uncanny connection to what I was going through. And so it sort of helped me feel like I wasn't alone and that other people have gone through this and survived. And so books and music played a really important role in those early days too.
So you experienced some signs. Do you think that was guided by your ex? Do you have any?
That's one of the things that this story kind of goes through. And it was some of the hardest parts to write because I had a very skeptical, rational, materialist worldview. And so I grew up outside of any religious training. And so to me, it was like, when you die, maybe there's nothing, maybe there's something, but we can't really know. So to have these things happen and wonder, like, is it Sean reaching back to make amends? Because like I said, I feel like he was pretty good hearted overall, but yet still he had all of these horrible secrets. And I think because of some mental illness that was undiagnosed, that's my working theory. When this thing started happening, I was so mad at him. I had to answer all of these questions for myself, but I tried to approach it in quite a rigorous way, trying to make sense of it.
Were you open to receiving these signs at the time? You start in this very angry space. And how was that for you in these moments where you may be receiving some sense of divine grace or whatever someone wants to refer to this as?
So all of those things, the questions of those were not resolved in my mind. Like I didn't openly believe in signs. I was pretty skeptical. And then if it was Sean, I wasn't open to talking to him. I was so mad at him. I was like, are you haunting us? And if you are, get out, because I'm not interested in any sort of overture. But that was part of what I had to reconcile. Things are happening that didn't used to happen. What does it mean? The book sort of grapples with these questions. I hesitate to talk about it too much because I definitely don't want to try and tell anyone what to think. This isn't a book that's trying to persuade anyone to any type of worldview. But what I found was that when I was open to possibilities, that also opened me up to healing. And it helped me sort of move out of the rage. Like the rage actually served me pretty well for a time. But then it got to a point where I knew I was right. He was wrong. And that didn't make me feel any better. And I was going to be stuck with this really corrosive rage spiral that was kind of eating me alive. And I didn't want that for myself. And so I think that paying attention to what else was there helped me move toward a better outcome for myself than bitterness and loneliness.
Record Scratch is sponsored by Adam Gibson Design, a national architectural design firm specializing in luxurious new homes, remodels, additions, bathrooms, kitchens, and exterior living spaces. The Adam Gibson Design team is known for minimalist luxury. Their designs incorporate clean lines, infusion of natural light, warmth, and efficient use of space. They design timeless and healthy environments for longevity. Visit adamgibsondesign.com to learn more. Adam Gibson Design. Design for living. So to get through the rage, the therapy was really helpful.
It was helpful to a point. So the therapy was helpful, but then later on, it was actually more body modalities, things that were helping me with things that were stored and moving and kind of releasing some stuff that was trapped. You're nodding. Do you have some experience with that as well with your...
Oh, massive. When I relaunched Record Scratch, I interviewed every therapist that helped me after Jake's death, my son, my 16-year-old who died 2.5 years ago. And I felt it was important to share. So yes, there's all kinds of modalities. There's a lot available depending on where someone lives. And it can be done remotely too, which is interesting.
I agree wholeheartedly. So it's so important. And I'm glad you did that because I think there's no playbook. We're at such loose ends when the rug gets yanked out like that with a tremendous unexpected loss. And so having resources and places to guide people is so important.
I think it's critical, especially with dealing with the heaviness of an event or any kind of trauma, whether it's grief related or regardless of what it is, it can definitely help. And as a mom, what was your experience with protecting your son? How did that parental element anchor you, assist you through this process?
It was all of the things. So it made me have to keep going. It gave me a reason and a purpose to figure things out and try to help both of us. And it was also really hard because I couldn't easily process my own stuff because I had to spend so much of my time and energy trying to help my son. And I wanted to protect his good memories of his dad. So I thought I had to sort of fake it a little bit in some of the things that we were doing. But that probably also helped me too, because it didn't let me go into the full totalizing narrative of like what an asshole Sean was, which was really tempting, right? Because for all intents, like everything that I was finding out was all bad. And it kind of erased everything that was ever seemed good about our relationship and life together. But as I had to help my son, I had to keep a tiny crack in that totalizing story. My son is so amazing. Some of the insights that he had, the way that he was relating to things, and how open he was to eventually have some of the truth that I did disclose as he was growing up, age appropriate. Something would come up and I would talk about one of the things that, say, his dad was struggling with. And every single time I did that, it seemed to relax him more. The truth was actually kind, because when the things were not good in our home, he saw and felt that too. And so the truth helped give him more context and help him explain the upheavals and the lost temper and the things that he had witnessed.
It is interesting, the power of truth. As you go through this process, what was your profession? Because you wrote this beautiful memoir and you were not a writer before.
That's right. I wasn't a writer before. I had worked as a teacher. I taught ESL, and then I worked as an appraiser for high-end homes for an insurance company for a while. I had done some grief workshops and that sort of thing. But I've always loved reading so much. Books have been such an important part of my life. And as a kid, I wrote a ton and I've always journaled. But I had to learn how to write in order to tell this story. So I took a billion classes and workshopped, and I really tried to build up my chops so that the story that I put into the world was something that people would want to read, and better than just my journal with those kind of angry rants that we can put down to make sense.
Well, I'm so grateful that you turned to writing. What is next for you? You have this amazing book out and you set a really high bar for a debut memoirist. What is next?
Thanks so much. I'm sort of taking things day by day, still trying to support the launch of this one and keeping some options open. But I found that I really love helping other people find their stories, because I was a teacher before and I've done a bit of teaching, writing, and reading for a few friends and that sort of thing. I might do some more in that regard too. And I've got some ideas for another story, but it's such a big project to write a book, as you know. I want to take a little bit of a break before I dive into something long form again.
Do you have any advice for anyone who is either recently widowed or has lost someone close to them? What are some of the steps that you recommend that they take?
One of the best things that anyone told me through my whole grief process was, a counselor said this to me, we don't know the future, no matter how much it feels like we do. And I hung on to that because I found, especially the early acute stages of grief, every day was so monotonous, but I could not have imagined. I'm coming right up to the 9th anniversary of Sean's death in just a couple of days. If you had told me then that I would have written a best-selling book, that I'd be being interviewed on a podcast with you, I would have scoffed at how unlikely that seemed. And so it's going to get better. It happens sometimes gradually and sometimes suddenly. And so just keep going, and one day you're going to feel alive again.
Thank you. That is all so beautiful. Thank you for sharing your story. Jessica Waite, author of The Widow's Guide to Dead Bastards.
Thanks, Kara.
Thank you for listening to Record Scratch. You can find Jessica Waite's book, The Widow's Guide to Dead Bastards, at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and at your local library. Record Scratch is sponsored by Adam Gibson Design. It is produced by Mary Lou Morose. Original music written and performed by Adam Wallace Gibson.